Good morning. Oh, sorry, frog in my throat. Good morning.
Good morning.
A few years ago, Simon and I were buying a camera. Simon enjoys photography. For those of you who don't know, Simon's my husband. Simon enjoys photography, and having proudly achieved a grade one in his CSE photography, he knows a little bit about how a camera works. I'd like to say he did better. He's sitting there very proud of himself. Would you like to tell everyone what you've got in your grade in your French, darling? Anyway, we were looking at the very complicated SLRs. The helpful shop assistant was showing Simon all the knobs and buttons and explaining how they all worked. I must have appeared rather vacant as I wondered at the complexity of the little black box in front of me. As the shop assistant looked at me, pointed at the little red button labelled simple, and said, "This button is for you, madam. It makes it all much easier." Cheeky little monkey, I thought, but he was so right. Reading Romans is a little bit similar for me. Trying to work out what Paul is saying in Romans is a little like trying to understand the complexities of the camera. The book of Romans has, at times, the feeling of a letter written by a lawyer, and apologies to lawyers present, that needs deciphering and unpicking to try to understand it. And for me, this passage is no exception. So I looked at it, I reread it, I read it in the Message Bible, I read it in the Youth Bible, and I prayed, "Lord, how do I preach on this?" And for me, the answer came in the word grace. This is a passage about God's grace. So in this, the final sermon in our series on Romans, I'd just like to give us a quick reminder of the background to the book of Romans. In this book, Paul is writing to the newly begun Roman church, which was started by the Jews who were converted at Pentecost. It was made up of both Jews and Gentiles. Paul had never been to Rome, but was hoping to go there on his travels. You see, he felt a very strong affiliation with the church, having once been a Jew himself. And at the point in the letter that we read today, Paul asks the crucial question, "Has God rejected the Israelites?" To which his response is a very definite no. You see, Paul knows the fullness of God's grace. Paul was effectively a human rights abuser of Christians, and yet he was chosen by God to play his part in the declaration and the exposition of the gospel. Paul knew that he was really not worthy to do this, and therefore he knew the extraordinary life-changing effect of grace in his life. And in this passage, Paul goes on to talk about those who are chosen by grace. They're not chosen because of their works, but by the grace of God. God's grace can be explained essentially as our salvation given, though we don't deserve it. It's given by God because he is who he is, not because of who we are or what we do. It's given irrespective of race, class, status, or any other classification we care to put ourselves in as human beings. And it's available through the death of Jesus Christ. And through grace, we are blessed. In order to understand grace a little better, I'd like to tell two stories. The first that shows what grace is not, and the second that shows us more about the essence of grace. I'll then look at how we can think about this in our lives. The first story I read in a book by Philip Yancey called What's So Amazing About Grace. I first read it about 10 years ago, and it's so powerful that it's stuck with me ever since. It's a story that can and indeed should impact our lives. It's told by a man who works with down and outs in Chicago, and he says, "A prostitute came to see me in wretched straits, homeless, sick, and unable to buy food for her 2-year-old daughter. And through sobs and tears, she told me that she had been renting out her daughter, just 2 years old, to men who were interested in kinky sex. She made more from renting out her daughter for an hour than she could earn in a whole night. She had to do it, she said, to support her own drug habit." He continued, "I could hardly bear hearing her sordid story. For one, it made me legally liable, and for the other, I had no idea what to say to this woman. At last, I asked her if she'd ever thought of going to the church for help. And I'll never forget the look of pure, naive shock that crossed her face. Church, she cried. Why would I ever go there? I was already feeling terrible about myself. They'd just make me feel worse." And the second story comes from the wonderful book and musical Les Misérables. One of the main characters, Jean Valjean, steals from a kindly and godly bishop. And instead of punishing Jean Valjean, the bishop lavishes more gifts upon him. Jean Valjean then sings his spine-tingling soliloquy that looks back on his life and then looks forward to a new beginning. And he sings of the bishop, "Yet why did I allow this man to teach my soul and teach me love? He treated me like any other. He gave me trust and called me brother." These stories show the church in diametrically opposite lights. And in consideration of the first story, it's sobering to remember that Jesus attracted those who were rejected by society. Indeed, they positively sought refuge in him. What's our position on this? Do we as individuals and as a church show people the grace of God, which is so freely given to us? Do we extend this on and show love and compassion to those that the world would not love? The prostitute would have surely known God's grace if she had been given the opportunity to understand it. She felt undeserving and terrible about herself. If she had discovered that God loved her and that an opportunity for freedom from her chaotic and shocking life was given freely by grace, she could have been transformed like Paul. However, in her view, the church didn't show God's grace, but had an attitude of condemnation. And then, in sharp contrast, the godly bishop in Les Misérables showers gifts upon an undeserving and indeed unexpecting Jean Valjean. It's a powerful story of the giving of God's grace from one man to the other. A phrase we often use is, "There but for the grace of God go I." It's an expression of humility and an understanding that there are outside factors, i.e. God, playing part in the situation. God's grace plays a huge part in our lives, and it's through his grace that we are here today. It's not through the things that we have done that we're able to sit on a pew in church, It's through the grace of God. It's not because of the people that we are that we have the right to come into the presence of God. It's through the grace of God. These facts are both humbling and give us huge reason to be thankful. Grace is something we don't deserve, and it brings phenomenal blessing to us. So can I encourage us to think about this as we go forward, to come to God in humility and gratitude, and then to, in turn, to think how we can become a people to show God's grace to others. For example, in the story of the prostitute, where would we be in the church when she came in? What would be our attitude? What is our attitude to those who the world rejects and to those who reject God? Paul shows in this passage that God still shows his grace to those who rejected him. And the Gospels tell us Jesus was often with those who the world rejects. So we have clear answers in the Bible. What then can we do to show God's grace in our church and in our lives? Amen.